Okay, great. And we're going to get started. We do these professional learning community calls every 2 weeks. The next one's going to be on the 20th. And we, in this cycle, we've been talking to our grantees and using them as mentors and sharing our experiences. And we're looking at the commonalities of grantees and successful grantees and some of the differences. So every 2 weeks we're talking to a different group. And this week we're going to have Susan Almo from Merrimack Valley WIB. We usually start off, of course, with GLOW, and she gives us a news from Washington, but the news is that GLOW's in Mickey Land. She's with Mickey Mouse right now. She and her husband went down to Disney World for a week, and so she regrets not being on the call, but she said they're just having too much fun down there. So they're going to she'll be back for the next one. They go down to Mickey Mouse Land about every 2 years. They love it, and they just go whole hog. They get the they get the package and stay at the hotels on site and go to all the amusements. So it's great. So I'm going to stand in for her today. And basically, the news from Washington is pretty much the way that it was. We're back to work. There is a delay in the issuing of the new RFP for those who are thinking of resubmitting or submitting a grant proposal. It'll probably come out in December to January, and then it'll have about about 2 months response time. They'll probably say, well, we want it short so they could award into the spring and early summer. So it kind of, as much as they try to do something different, it usually falls back into the old schedule. It'll probably be similar to last year, and so we'll be looking forward to the RFP coming out this winter. I would, for those that are thinking of applying or reapplying, go back to last year's RFP. It'll be very similar. They don't change them too much, usually around the fringes. They're going to be heavy involvement on community development and community involvement, as usual. What usually changes is they go to other EPA program offices and they try to get them to join in on the conversation, and so that may be a possibility. In recent years, they brought in the water, Office of Water and Wastewater, which has been great because there's lots of environmental jobs in that area. Of course, they brought in the toxics, and they have not brought in the air programs yet, and we're kind of hoping that at some point they'll bring in Office of Air Programs. They've got many of the other ones in there. So what I would say, what might change is your curriculum might change. The other issues will probably be fairly similar. But what's really important for those that are contemplating sending in a proposal, if you haven't done one before, you really need to get your partners lined up because that does take time. And as we get closer to that RFP, probably our next cycle will be focusing on RFPs. The other announcement I would say that I need to make today is about the Green Jobs Council. And someone just joined?
Bruce Diamond.
Hey, Bruce. How are you? Bruce is
from Mike.
Iowa. And we're just
sorry, I'm
talking
late.
About, well, that's okay. I just told him that GLOW is in Mickey Land right now. But Bruce is... I won't make you stand in. I'm just going through news from Washington. The other thing that's important in that I think I needed to mention was the Green Jobs Conference. It's in February, and you might want to go if you're interested. It's February 11th and 12th. It's a very interesting conference. It's held at the Washington Hilton in Washington. They do charge $95. Someone just joined?
Yes, this is Laurie with the Tohono Nation. I've been on a couple of phone calls previously.
Great. Okay. Well, that's fine. Welcome. So anyway, the Green Jobs Conference in Washington is kind of interesting. It's a little different perspective from most of your government conferences. This is Green Jobs is more a little more politically oriented, but they're very much into jobs of all types, which includes environmental and brownfields jobs. Very oriented towards tribal. It's a very interesting experience. One of the last ones I went to, we had tribal choruses. We had steel workers support this very strongly. A lot of the mayors speak at this. The Secretary of State was speaker at one year. This is John Kerry. He spoke 2 years ago. Very interesting group, and they also have an advocacy day. If you sign up, and the reason I'm bringing it up is if you sign up today, which is the last day of early bird registration, it's $195. It does go up, and you can even register on site. It goes up to about $225. So, and then they also have, I think, a special rate at the Hilton. So it isn't inexpensive, but it's an interesting conference, and it's all about all kinds of green jobs. So it's something you might want to consider. I'll put them in the notes. Of course, if you want to get that early bird special, you might have to go to the Green Jobs website. Today is the last day, and it's called greenjobsconference.org if you're interested. So with that, we're going to move on to Merrimack. And Susan, it's great that you were able to be with us today. Merrimack, just a brief introduction. I look at the way we have these grantees. If you look at the broad spectrum, we've got standalone grantees. We've got some that are construction-oriented. They're attached to something like a youth build. We've got some community organizations, whether it's Goodwill or an organization that's a community organization. We have colleges and universities like we had at Jackson State. And then we have WIBS. And today we're going to talk about WIBS. And included in the WIBS that are principal grantees, there's also city governments like Durham. City of Durham, North Carolina, went in for a grant. And in this case, Merrimack Valley WIB went in for a grant. And they've been very successful in 2011, and they got re-upped this last year, 2013. So, Susan, I'm going to let you take over and tell us about your program. Oh, one last thing is Susan was very instrumental. In fact, the one that wrote their proposal, so we may want to talk to her about do's and don'ts on that. Susan?
Very good. Thanks so much, Mike. And I just wanted to ask first, how many people on the call have gotten grants in the past from the EPA? And how many are going to be trying this year? Mike, what do you think? Are most people...
I would say about half and half. And when we send out... We have about 250 people on our list. So when we send out post-session notes, I would say between wanting to propose and re-up, we have about... half and half, actually. So
okay, good, because I would say I am the one who wrote the proposals both times and conceptualized the program from the start. So I remember very well what it was like back then when we didn't have a grant, about of how it felt to be thinking about how to get this all put together. And so maybe I will talk about that a little bit at the end, in the part which is talking about tips for applying for a grant. And maybe the first one I would say is do participate in these conversations, the PLCs. I know that that was one of the very first things I did, and it was very helpful to get these kinds of reminders from the start, things like get your partners lined up. I took that as gospel, and so that was great. But let me, first I'd like to mention the Workforce Investment Boards. How have we worked this out? Maybe not all the Workforce Investment Boards have done it the same way, but it's true, we're a different kind of organization to be applying for these grants. And because we are a small staff and we have a board made up of education institutions, private sector, community organizations, and what we do is we look at what are the needs of businesses in our area and how can we make sure that our job seekers are prepared for those. And but so we're a very small staff. We're not implementers. But we also charter the Career Center here, so we're very closely related to to the Career Center, work hand-in-hand with them, and they, of course, do see 14,000, 15,000 job seekers a year and place job seekers and help them with job-seeking skills. So that's been our main partner, and we also partner outside of the Career Center to get our actual training done. So let me talk about our first program. This was what we call our Training for Sustainability program, and that was 2011 to 2013. And in this program, we were looking to train 39 unemployed residents in Lawrence, and we were putting them through three different training sessions that were 8 to 10 week periods each. And I should say first a little bit about our area as well. Lawrence is an area that we're in Lawrence, Massachusetts. Our region, they call the Merrimack Valley, it's 15 communities. But the area that is the most in need of assistance in job seeking and in job placement is Lawrence. And so that is where we focused. In August, the unemployment rate was still very high. It was 14.6%. That's the latest figure we've gotten so far. And it's a community that's right now about 75% Hispanic, and it's a community that faces a lot of educational and linguistic barriers to self-sufficiency. And it's also a place that has a lot of brownfields, the whole area, because it's really the cradle of the textile industry. So there's a lot of contamination, both in the buildings and in different sites. So the first program that we put together, we wanted to look at what are the jobs coming up in the area and making sure that we train people in these areas. So we were the first training, we were preparing for three different kinds of jobs, and that was recycling jobs, deconstruction and remediation, and sustainable landscaping. And we wanted to prepare people for three different kinds of jobs because we felt like each one of these areas are jobs that, because of the very nature of their industry, they are cyclical. Sometimes there's a lot of work, sometimes there's not a lot of work. So we wanted to make sure that people were aware of at least these three different kinds of areas. And we also had OSHA certifications in there. We had the 10-hour construction safety, the 40-hour HAZWOPER, 8-hour confined space, and the RRP, the EPA RRP. And at that time, too, as Mike mentioned before, there were the different departments of the EPA that were involved and providing funding. So we also had awareness training in underground storage tanks, alternative remediation, and we also put in a 12-hour course on groundwater, soil, and water testing. And on top of all of that, we did want to give a little overview of green jobs and green literacy sustainability. So we had 18 hours in that area and 24 hours in job readiness and job-seeking skills. And as I say, this was a 10-week program that we ran for 10 weeks twice. And then we decided it was just a little too long, and so we condensed the deconstruction piece, and we took it down to 8 weeks. So that was our first program. The second one that we're coming up, what we also find, we have a training program called the Environmental Technical Training Program that's going to be 2014 to 2017. And this time our goal is to train 45 unemployed residents, and now we're going to be focusing exclusively on residents of Lawrence. And we've narrowed down our job, what we're training for, the areas we're trying to get people employed in, and that is now we're going to be looking pretty much at recycling and environmental remediation. And we are now focusing more on remediation, specifically lead and asbestos removal, because there are so many companies that work in these areas here in our area, in the Lawrence area, and felt that let's make sure that we're getting exactly the skills they need. As you heard the last time, we didn't do training in lead worker and asbestos worker to get credentialed in those areas. And we realized that was a mistake that's really needed in this area. We had the HAZWOPER the last time, but not the lead and asbestos worker. So that we put in this time. And we shortened our program as well. Now it's 5 weeks. We're having 8-hour days, but we wanted to get it shorter so that more people could participate. And the last time, a good thing that we did that really helped to bring in more participants was that we made it possible for people on unemployment to continue receiving their unemployment while they were in our training. So that was a big help. And just to say a little bit more about our training, this time we're not really doing landscaping, but we are doing stormwater management. There's going to be a piece in there on that. And we also wanted to bring our employers even closer to our program, and so we're going to put a career fair in there for our career fair and even an awareness of small business, because what we find is that there are opportunities for remediators who are very small scale, even, you know, small companies, to go out and get jobs in our area, and so that there is a call for very small scale businesses, and we want our trainees to have a sense of where to go to get more information about small businesses. So that's a little bit of an overview of what our training programs are. I guess I'd like to know what kind of information would be most interesting for people to hear about, whether it would be recruitment strategies or placement, tips about applying for the grant.
Yeah, first of all, certainly on recruitment and do you have, for example, any kind of tryout? Do you have to whittle it down? Do you have a lot more applicants, or do you require GEDs? And how about drugs and ex-offenders?
Okay, in terms of recruitment, as I said, the Career Center was doing most of the recruiting during our first program. And this time we're going to open that up a little bit so that the Career Center is going to be recruiting candidates, but we also are going to have our trainer, Groundwork Lawrence, do quite a bit of recruiting. And, you know, we really go out into the community to look for candidates. We were on the radio, Spanish radio. We are on social media. We've got flyers around town. Because even though there's so many people who are out of work, everybody has their own situation, and, you know, whether they're interested, whether they have time, all kinds of things. So we make a big effort in getting the word out to the community. And we have had a requirement of having a TABE score of a level 7. And we do prefer to have a GED, and transportation is just, unfortunately, it's required because the jobs really are all over the place, and people have to have a way to get there. And we don't do any drug testing. We do the academic testing to get the grade level. And when people get, when they're interested and they fill out an application to show their interest, and if they kind of, we tell them about the program and they fulfill the requirements academically, and knowing that the jobs are physical jobs, then we do have, the beginning of the program, there is a one-day community service project to make sure that people understand, you know, this is going to be some physical work here, it's going to be a strenuous program, and just to make sure that there is a commitment.
Very interesting. So in other words, before they come into the program, you have them do a community service project?
Yes, we do that.
That is great. Do you ever lose people as a result of that, or they say, well, I'm not going to do that, or is that just something?
You know, we haven't yet, but what we do find is that in that first week or two, we might have people who realize they just aren't going to be able to make it to the program. You know, maybe that it's just, it seems like the time commitment is going to be too much. So we haven't had anybody drop out because of, you know, the physical nature of the work.
Mm-hmm.
But for other obstacles, people have dropped out. And so that's the reason, too, we usually, even though we want to have 15 people in our trainings, we will recruit and start, you know, 17 or 18 people at a time.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Any questions on how they go about recruiting? And do you have any issues on ex-offenders? Or do you have any? Now, you target primarily Hispanic communities. So is it, you have language issues or?
Well, you know, what we've decided is that we really need to run our classes in English, but our we always have bilingual staff members who are present, and we have bilingual Spanish materials available. But we do need to have people who are at least conversant in English. And that can be an issue for us because, you know, it's we hate to turn people away, but we know that the employers have said to us that that's really what they need for safety because they need to have people be able to understand directions and do some basic reading in English.
It's interesting that you, and it does make sense where you're located. Lawrence is... it is the home of not only the home of textiles, but also the home of organized labor. And it's interesting that you really haven't discussed, as some other programs have, in terms of working with organized labor. It sounds like you're, because you are a WIB, you're not associated with organized labor. Is that correct, or how does that work?
We definitely associate with organized labor when the opportunity arises. In this program, we haven't because most of our remediation companies are not labor shops. But on the other hand, there are some that are. And in those cases, we have looked at how there's a way that our trainees can become employed and looking at isn't there some kind of way that the fee to enter the union can be somehow mitigated. And we did have one employer that was helping with that.
That's great. That's become an issue over the years, and unfortunately the grant will not support that. But people like yourself have figured out ways of getting contributions from employers to provide stipends to their participants, which is really interesting.
Yeah, no, and that's what we saw we had to do because we do have the laborers union is very strong here. So that there are employers that are union shops, and still we certainly want to get our trainees employed with them. So it's been a challenge to get it worked out, but we have.
Yeah, and the fact that you are a WIB, and we can move into with the remaining some of the time we have in terms of writing this grant, it's interesting because many of the grantees that have talked about their program have worked, they're not WIBs, but they've worked closely with the WIBs, and they screen everyone that comes through. You don't have to be qualified, WIB qualified, so to speak, to get benefits, but they all go through the program. In your case, it's almost de facto because they're coming from the program, aren't they? So,
well, you know, actually, though, what you're talking about our Workforce Investment Act funding and that people have to qualify to receive assistance with those funds. But what we find is that when we're able to be awarded grant funding like the EPA funding, we find that we don't have to use all of those criteria to assist people. A lot of times when they come in the door and they need help and we want to give assistance, they might not fulfill our WIA criteria for assistance, and yet because the EPA doesn't require us to make sure everyone fulfills those, we can help them. So that's been, actually it's great. That's why we need other funding sources than just WIA funding. Because, you know, there's so many people who definitely need help and are looking for work, but we have federal funding available to help them, but if there's certain qualifications that they can't fulfill, well, we can only help them so much.
That's right. And it's interesting that when people look at the WIB, they think it's government and they're inflexible. And about 4 years ago when that act was enacted, they made the movement was to make WIBs entrepreneurial. So the WIBs actually have to go out and leverage their funding just as EPA people. So they're looking for ways to partner with community organizations and different groups. And for those people who are looking at developing a proposal who have not yet, we've talked about linking up with the community organizations or a youth build or a community college, but they may feel a hesitancy to link up with a WIB, but actually a WIB as fiscal agent can offer tremendous advantages. As it sounds like in your case, that if someone came to you, now you reached out to Groundwork Providence, you reached out
Groundwork
to
Lawrence, yeah.
Groundwork Lawrence. It could have been the other way, though, couldn't it?
Right. But I think that's a really good point, that it's great for people to reach out to the WIB, because the WIBs and the career centers definitely are looking for new models. They're looking for new partners. They're looking for new funding sources because, yes, federal funding is decreasing all the time. And that's one reason. And the other reason is because job seekers have needs beyond what federal government funding will fulfill. And we want to help them. So that working with different partners in new kinds of ways is exactly what we need to do.
Now, Susan, you were the one that wrote this grant, and I don't know, did you write both grants? But you obviously are a good grant writer because the competition is stiff. In other words, there's usually 60 or so grant applicants, and about 12 will get funded, and about half those are old and half are new for those who are looking at reapplying. And what, in terms of grantsmanship, and we usually don't talk about that in this cycle, but what did you find you needed to do to make this work?
A lot of things. I think you really have to follow everything, be really thorough about everything. Listen in on the PLC conversations, participate, read over that RFP, and answer absolutely everything that they ask. When you write your proposal, answer everything, but don't make it dry. It also needs to be a story. And I think you need to first go out and do your homework, which is understand who are your job seekers and understand who are your employers. Make sure that your employers are that there's going to be a market for the kinds of workers that EPA wants to fund. You can't force that kind of thing. If that's not happening in your area, for example, I don't think that EPA is right now funding energy efficiency. Well, that's green jobs. Weatherization is green jobs. We'd love to have that work, and there's just about everywhere in the country now that is in northern climates, we're doing weatherization, but that would require another funding source than EPA. So make sure that there are the employers who really need job seekers, they need candidates in the areas that EPA is interested in funding. And also go and look at your state and federal regulations to kind of get an idea of what kinds of jobs are growing or will be growing in your area. And make sure you put awareness classes in on those areas. For example, we've got a waste ban on construction waste, demolition waste, so that people have to know about deconstruction. Now, it's a really important area in Massachusetts. We're going to have an organic waste ban that's coming up. It's going to go into effect next July, where all generators of organic waste on an institutional scale, I can't remember how much it is, maybe 1,000 pounds a month or something, have to find an alternative place to get rid of their waste. Well, now we have all kinds of anaerobic digester companies coming in. So it's good to check into those regulations, what areas are going to grow. It's not enough just to say, well, we have a lot of lead and asbestos removal jobs here. Where are they going to go? Are they going to grow? Look at the labor market information. And also make those contacts very solidly with your employers, because at the end, this is all about placement. And so whatever training program is designed, it has to really be based on that the employers need it. And I would say, too, it's very important to get in touch with the EPA project coordinator in the region. Ask them questions. Let them know that you're interested while you still can before the RFP comes out. So, those are some of the tips those are the things that we did from the start to make sure that we had a very solid proposal.
How do you place your students? Do you actively have a placement activity? It sounds like you're spending a lot of time on life skills in terms of getting them ready for employment. Do they then start searching on their own, or how do you handle that post-training effort?
In our career center, we have what's called a business service representative, and that's the person who stays in contact with the employers we identified at the proposal stage and is learning about job opportunities. And it's our BSR that's then in touch with the trainees to help them get placed and put the two in contact. And in our next, in our new training that's coming up, we're also going to go beyond that and not just look for placement or do the placement within our career center. We're also going to be using our other community partners that work in workforce development because they hear a lot of positions as well, and we're looking to provide a small incentive if our candidates are placed through their connections. So that's kind of a new strategy that we're going to start using because we want to make sure that we're, hearing of all the jobs that are available and making sure that our candidates are placed.
Awesome. Well, listen, we promise everyone we keep this to 30 minutes and people have got things to do, and that is really good review of your program. And it's interesting because every time we talk to a different grantee, everyone does something just a little bit different, and you've got some great ideas here, and we'll try to put them in post-session notes for everyone to share. So
great, thank you.
Thank you. Our next session, we're going to do another one on the 20th of November. So if you all have the same time, same place, if you all have a half hour available, we'd like to have you tune in. Any questions? Now, Susan, is it okay if I put your contact information? If someone has a question, inquiry, or anything, they can contact you?
Absolutely. That'd be great.
Okay. We'll get that out probably in the next day then. Anything want to say before we sign off here? Okay, great. Great. Thanks, Susan. It's been great.
Well, thank you, Mike.
Y'all have a good couple of weeks. Okay. Take care.
Okay. Bye-bye.